Chapter 16. The Shadow of a Great Sorrow. Quote, "With clouds he covereth the light," close quote. No human life is without some experience of clouded sky and stormy days, and sometimes, quote, "the clouds return after the rain," close quote. Is it a blessed experience to recognize the silver lining in the darkness storm cloud, and better still to be sure of the shining of God's light behind a sky that seems wholly and hopelessly overcast? The year 1870 was made forever pathetically memorial by the decease of Mrs. Mueller, who's lived just long enough to see the last of the new orphan houses opened. From the outset of the work in November 1835, for more than 35 years, this beloved, devoted wife had been also a sympathetic helper. This wedded life had approached very near to the ideal of communal bliss by reason of mutual fitness, common faith in God, and love for His work, and long association in prayer and service in their case. The days of courtship were never past. Indeed, the tender and delicate mutual affections of these early days rather increased than decreased as the years went on, and the great maxim was both proven and illustrated: the secret of willing love is the secret of keeping it. More than that, such an affection grows and becomes more and more a fountain of mutual delight. Never has his beloved, quote, Mary, close quote, been so precious to her husband as during the very year of her departure. This marriage union was so happy that Mr. Mueller could not withhold his loving witness that he had never saw her at any time after she became his wife without a new feeling of delight, and day by day they were wont to find at least a few moments of rest together, sitting after dinner, hand in hand, in loving intercourse of mind and heart, made the more complete by this touch of physical contact, and whether in speech or silence, communing in the Lord. Their happiness in God and each other was perennial, perpetual, growing as the years fled by. Mr. Mueller's solemn conviction was that all this wedded bliss was due to the fact that she was not only a devoted Christian, but their one united object was to live only and wholly for God, that they had always an abundance of work for God, in which they were heartily united. This work was never allowed to interfere with the care of their own souls, or their seasons of private prayer and study of the Scriptures, and that they were wont daily, often thrice daily, to search at a time of united prayer and praise, when they brought before the Lord the matters which at times called for thanksgiving and supplication. Mrs. Mueller had never been a vigorous woman, and more than once had been brought nigh unto death. In October 1859, after 29 years of wedded life and love, she had been laid aside by rheumatism, continuing in great suffering for about 9 months. Quite helpless and unable to work, but it was felt to be a special mark of God's love and faithfulness that this very affliction was used by Him to reestablish her in health and strength, the compulsory rest made necessary for the greater part of a year, and Mr. Mueller's judgment, a means of prolonging her life and a period of service for the 10 years following. The severe trial met them both in faith had issued and much blessing both to the soul and body. The closing scenes of this beautiful life are almost too sacred to be enveloped to common eyes. For some few years before her departure, it was plain that her health and vitality were declining. With difficulty she prevailed on, however, to abate her activity, or even when the distressing cough attacked her, to allow a physician to be called. Her husband carefully guarded and nursed her, and by careful attention to diet and rest, by avoidance of needless exposure, by constant resort to prayer, she was kept alive through much weakness, and sometimes much pain. On a Saturday night, February 5th, she found that she had not the use of one of her limbs, and it was obvious that the end of it was nigh. Her own mind was clear, and her own heart was at peace. She herself remarked, "He will come soon." In a few minutes after 4 in the afternoon, the Lord's Day, February 6, 1870, she sweetly passed with human toils and trials to be forever with the Lord. Under the weight of such sorrow, most men would have sunk into depths of almost helpless despair. But this man of God, sustained by divine love, at once sought for occasions of thanksgiving, and instead of repining over his loss, gratefully remembered and recorded the goodness of God in taking such a wife, releasing her saintly spirit from the bondage of weakness, sickness, and pain. Rather than leaving her to protracted suffering in the mute agony of helplessness, and above all, introducing her to her heart's desire, the immediate presence of the Lord Jesus, in the higher service of a celestial sphere. It is not that grief akin to selfishness, which dwells so much in our own deprivations, as to be oblivious to the static gain of the departed saints, who, withdrawal from us, and absent from the body, are home and with the Lord? It is only in these circumstances of extreme trial, which prove to ordinary men a crushing weight, the implicit faith in the Father's unfailing wisdom and love proves its full power to sustain. Where self-will is truly lost, in the will of God, the life that is hidden in Him is most radiant, exhibited in the darkest hour. The death of this beloved wife afforded an illustration of this. Within a few hours after the withdrawal of her, who had shared with him with the planning and working of these long years of service, Mr. Mueller went to the Monday evening prayer meeting, then held in Salem Chapel, to mingle his prayers and praises as usual with those of his brethren. With a little shining countenance, he rose and said, "Beloved brethren and sisters in Christ, I ask you to join with me in hearty praise and thanksgiving to my precious Lord for his loving kindness in having taken my darling, beloved wife, out of the pain and suffering which she has endured, and to his own presence. And as I rejoice in everything that is for her happiness, so I now rejoice as I realize how far she is in beholding her Lord, with whom she loved so well, that than in any joy has known or could have known. I ask you also to pray that the Lord's will so enabled me to have fellowship in her joy, that my bereaved heart may be occupied with her blessedness, instead of my unspeakable loss." These remarkable words is applied by one who himself presented on many memory they had made an indelible impression. This occurrence had a marked effect upon all who were at that meeting. Mrs. Mueller was known by all as a most valuable, lovely, and holy woman and wife. After nearly 40 years of wedded life and love, she had left the earthly home for the heavenly. To her husband she had been a blessing beyond description, and to her daughter Lydia, at once a wise and tender mother and a sympathetic companion, the loss to them both could never be made up on earth. Yet in these circumstances this man of God had grace given to forget his own and his daughter's irreparable loss, and to praise God for the unspeakable gain to the parted wife and mother. The body was laid to rest February 11th, many thousands of sorrowing friends evincing the deepest sympathy. 1,200 orphans mingled in the funeral procession, and the whole staff of helpers so far as they could be spared from the houses. The bereaved husband, strangely upheld by the arm of the almighty friend of whom he trusted, took upon himself the funeral service, both at the chapel and the ceremony. He was taken seriously ill afterward, but as soon as his returning strength allowed, he preached his wife's funeral sermon. Another memorial occasion, it was supernatural serenity of his peace and then presence of such a bereavement, that led his attending physician to say to a friend, "I have never before seen so inhuman a man." Yes, inhuman indeed, though far from inhumane. Lifted up by the weakness of mere humanity by a power not of man. That funeral sermon was a notable tribute to the goodness of the Lord, even in the great affliction of his life. The text was, quote, "Thou art good and doest good." Psalm CXIX 68. Its three divisions were, quote, the Lord was good and did good, first in giving her to me, second in so long leaving her to me, and third in taking her from me. It is happily presented in Mr. Mueller's journal and must be read to be appreciated. Narrative 3, pages 574 to 594. This union began in prayer, was in prayer sanctified to the end. Miss Mueller's chief excellent lay in her devoted piety. She wore that one ornament which in the sight of God is great price, the meek and quiet spirit. The beauty of the Lord, her God, was upon her. She had sympathetically shared her husband's prayer and tears during all the long trial of time of faith and patience, and partake of the joys and rewards of the triumph hours. Mr. Mueller's own witness to her leaves nothing more to be added, for this is a tribute of him who knew her longest and best. He writes, quote, she was God's own gift, exquisitely suited to me even in natural temperament. Thousands of times I said to her, my darling, God himself singled you out for me as the most suitable wife I could possibly wish to have had. As to culture, she had a bias of sensible practical education, surmounting and adorned by ladylike accomplishments, which had neither time nor inclination to indulge in her married life. Not only was she skilled in the languages and in such higher studies as astronomy, but in mathematics also. This last qualification made her 34 years an invaluable help to her husband, as a month by month she examined all the account books and the hundreds of bills and matrons of the orphan houses, and with the eye of an expert detected the least mistake. All her training and natural fitness indicated a providential adaptation to her work, like, quote, the round peg in the round hole, close quote. Her practical education in needlework and her knowledge of the material most suitable for various household uses made her competent to direct both in the purchase and the manufacture of cloths and other fabrics for garments, bed linen, etc. She moved about the orphan houses like an angel of love, taking unselfish delight in such humble ministries as preparing neat, clean beds and to rest the little ones, and covering them with warm blankets in the cold weather. For the sake of him who took the little children in his arms, she became to these thousands of destitute orphans a nursing mother. Shortly after death, a letter was received from a believing orphan, some 17 years before sent out to service, asking on behalf of the other formerly in the house permission to erect a stone over Mrs. Mueller's grave, an expression of love and grateful of remembrance. Constance being given, hundreds of little offerings came in from the orphans who, during the 25 years previously, had been under her motherly oversight. A beautiful tribute to her worth and touching offering from those who had been to her a larger family. The dear daughter, Lydia, had 2 years before Mrs. Mueller's departure found in one of her mother's pocketbooks a sacred memorandum in her own writing, which she brought to her bereaved father's notice 2 days after the wife had departed. It belongs among the precious relics of her history. It reads as follows, quote, should it please the Lord to remove Mrs. Mary Mueller by sudden dismissal, let none of the beloved survivors consider that it is the way of judgment, either to her or to them. She has so often, when enjoying conscious nearness to Lord, felt how sweet it will be to depart and be forever with Jesus. That nothing but the shock it would be to her beloved husband and child, etc., has checked in her the longing desire that thus her happy spirit might take its flight. Precious Jesus, thy will in this and everything else, and not hers, be done. These words to Mr. Mueller in his last legacy were with the comfort they gave him, the loving sympathy of his precious life, who did all that a daughter could do to fill a mother's place, and with the remembrance of him who hath said, quote, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee, close quote. He went on his lonely pilgrim way, rejoicing in the Lord, feeling nevertheless a wound in his heart that seemed rather to deepen than to heal. 16 months passed when Mr. James Wright, who, like Mr. Mueller, had been bereft of his companion, asked of him the hand of the beloved Lydia in marriage. The request took Mr. Mueller wholly by surprise, but he felt that no man living could he with more joyful confidence commit and entrust his choicest remaining earthly treasure, and, ever solicitous for others' happiness rather than his own, he encouraged his daughter to accept Mr. Wright's preferred love. When she naturally hesitated on her father's account, on November 16, 1861, they were married and began a life of mutual prayer and sympathy, which, like that of her father and mother, proved supremely and most ideally happy, helpful, and useful. While as yet this event was only in prospect, Mr. Mueller felt his own lonely condition keenly, and much more in view of his daughter's expected departure to her husband's home. He felt the need of some one to share the intimate of his toils and prayers, and help in the Lord's work, and the persuasion grew upon him that it was God's will that he should marry again. After much prayer, he determined to ask Miss Susanna Grace Sanger to become his wife, having known her for more than 25 years as a constant disciple, and believing her to be well fitted to be the helper in the Lord accordingly. 14 days after his daughter's marriage to Mr. Wright, he entered into similar relations with Miss Sanger, who for years, after joining him in prayer and selfish giving and labors for souls. The second Mrs. Mueller was of one mind with her husband as to the stewardship of the Lord's property. He found her poor, for what she had once possessed she had lost, and had she been rich he would have regarded her wealth as an obstacle to marriage, unfitting her to be his companion on a self-denial based on scriptural principle. Riches or hoarded wealth would have been to both of them a snare, and so she also felt, so that having still, before her marriage, a remnant of £200, she had once put it at the Lord's disposal, thus joining her husband in a life of voluntary poverty. And although subsequently legacies were paid to her, she continued to the day of her death to be poor for the Lord's sake. The question had often been asked Mr. Mueller, what would become of the work when he, the master workman, should be removed? Men find it hard to get their eyes off the instrument and remember that there is only, strictly speaking, one agent. For one agent is the one who works, and its instrument for what the agent works with. Though provisions might be made in a board of trustees for carrying on the orphan work, where would be found the man to take the direction of it, a man whose spirit was so akin to that of the founder that he would trust in God and depend on him just as Mr. Mueller had done before? Such the inquiries of some of the somewhat doubtful, fearful observers of the great and many-branched work carried on under Mr. Mueller's supervision. To all such questions he had always one answer readily. His one uniform solution of all cares and perplexities, the living God. He who had built the orphan houses could maintain them. He who had raised them up, one humble man to oversee the work in his name, could provide for a worthy successor. Like Joshua, who had not only followed, but succeeded Moses, Jehovah the host is not limited in resources. Nevertheless, much prayer was offered the Lord would provide such a successor, and in Mr. James Wright, the prayer was answered. He was not chosen as Mr. Mueller's son-in-law, for the choice was made before his marriage to Lydia Mueller was even thought of by him. For more than 30 years, even from his boyhood, Mr. Wright had been well known to Mr. Mueller, and his growth in the things of God had been watched by him. For 13 years he had been already his right hand and most important matters, and for nearly all that time had been held up before God as his successor. In the prayers of Mr. and Mrs. Mueller, both of whom felt divinely assured that God would fit him more and more to take the entire burden of responsibility. When in 1870 the wife fell asleep in Jesus, and Mr. Mueller was still himself ill, he opened his heart to Mrs. Wright as to succession. Humility led him to shrink from such a post, and then his wife feared it would prove too burdensome for him. But all objections were overborne when it was seen and felt to be of God's call. It was 21 months after this when, in November 1871, Mr. Wright was married to Mrs. Mueller's only daughter and one and child, so that it was quite apparent that he had neither sought the position he now occupies, nor was he appointed to it was because Mr. Mueller's son-in-law. For at this time, his wife was living and in health from May 1872, therefore Mr. Wright shared with his father-in-law the responsibilities of the institution, and gave him great joy as a partner, successor, and full sympathy with all the great principles on which his work had been based. A little over 3 years after Mr. Mueller's second marriage, in March 1874, Mrs. Mueller was taken ill and became 2 days later feverish and restless. And after about 2 weeks was attacked with a hemorrhage, which brought her also very near to the gates of death. She rallied, but fever delirium followed, and obstinate sleeplessness, till for a second time she seemed at the point of death. Indeed, so low was her vitality, that she was of late was on April 17th, a most experienced London physician, said that he had never known any patient to recover from such an illness, and thus a third time in all human hope of restoration seemed gone. Yet, in answer to prayer, Mrs. Mueller was raised up, and at the end of May was taken to the seaside for a change of air, and grew rapidly stronger, until she was entirely restored. Thus the Lord spared her to be the companion of her husband, and those years of missionary touring which enabled him to bear such worldwide witness. Out of the shadow of his griefs, this beloved man of God ever came to find that divine refreshment, which is the shadow of a great rock in a weary land.